Oh, welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report, a daily editorial that we are recording shortly after the Fed statement has come out. I am chatting with Chris Temple, and Chris, let's recap what came out of the Fed. Not a whole lot new. The language that was changed really just lined up with some of the new expectations that the Fed stated last time they met. They are maintaining their target range for the federal funds rate at 1.75% to 2%. They also reiterated some of their comments on how they see the economy as strong in the U.S. What were your general takeaways, if any, from this statement?
There was not a single thing in there that was surprising. Of course, without a press conference and with Jerome Powell being inclined to use as few words as possible, they didn't really give us much except the highlights of how they see things today. So we're going to have to wait for a little while till the minutes come out, where I think there still are going to be some unanswered questions, at least that I have. But they upgraded somewhat their language as far as economic growth is concerned, left very much on the table the idea of two more rate hikes this year. There's no reason to read anything that's gone away. And generally speaking, it's, if I've been critical at times of the markets being like Alfred E. Newman, what me worry, that's what the Fed is like. They're not worried about anything, seemingly, and they're happy with the economy. They've intimated already that they're not going to worry about damage from a trade war until it actually happens. If it happens, well, we might get some insight on the next steps in that, supposedly at 3:30 today after you and I talk, when the White House makes a statement on presumably these new tariff threats with China. So we'll see. But the Fed, all they care about, as I've said numerous times, is that until there's something major that comes along to stop them, they really are, contrary to what they claim, somewhat on autopilot, where they're going to raise rates every quarter, continue to unwind their balance sheet until something big makes them stop.
I think that autopilot comment that you made there is spot on. The statement, again, it's only one page long and just speaks high level how it seems confident they are that they are going to stay the status quo. So moving on from there, let's talk about the markets. And one of the big movers that caught my eye early on today and really has continued to be weak are the base metals. We look at copper, and copper is down 10 cents, almost 3.5%. It has been a very rough ride for copper over the last 2 months, topping just short of 330, and now the whole way down at about 270, just above 270. Rough ride for copper. Do you think this is all overdone? Does this make any sense to you, how weak copper is?
Well, I'll tell you look at today, and I listened to an analyst this morning talk about this, Corey. Number one, China, which on and off for a while was trying to wring some of the excess out of its financial system and even the shadow banks, bring some sobriety back. They've done a 180. They're back to stimulus mode. The yen has been falling sharply, because that's one of the ways they're trying to keep things afloat over there and take some of the sting out of this evolving trade war. And if anything was going to help sentiment some, it would be that China has pretty much gone away for now from any semblance of trying to tighten policy. That didn't help. You've got two active strikes and another at Escondida, on tap with big copper miners in Chile. That should have helped the price. It didn't. And what little bit of a short squeeze attempt we saw over the last few trading days frittered away as fast as it started, and now we're on the back foot again. So it tells you, I think, that there's this underlying fear that an evolving trade war, and let's not forget weaker economic numbers of late in Europe, the big picture for some of these investors in the commodity space seems to be that we're in much more danger of a contraction and weaker demand because of all of this than anything else.
Yeah, that is, I guess, a concern, and it should be a concern, especially for those traders that were looking at copper as maybe an indicator that things were starting to do a bit better. Right now, though, Man, copper has been truly beat up, and that really speaks to across the board in the base metals, though, too, Chris. So, I don't know, an interesting comment, but let's also look at what's going on in crude. Crude is, again, moving down today, $1.36 down. It is about $64 or $67.40 for a barrel, down 2%. Crude, for as bullish as the chart still looks, has been under a bit of pressure. Any comments why?
Well, you've had, we talked about this a day or two ago, you know, the latest reason is that you had a larger inventory build and it had been expected. It just got announced. That took a little bit of steam out of the price. But look, you've got a very mixed bag, Corey, of both bullish and bearish factors. As I've commented, where the stock market's concerned, not that I've really been that correct yet, I'm early. Where the stock market at some point has to start looking past a peak in corporate earnings and a peak in economic growth acceleration to maybe next year when things are a lot more subdued. Likewise, you know, we're a month roughly from the end of the big demand season, at least here in the U.S., for gasoline. And is there going to be enough traction for the price to keep it toward the higher end of its range as we get to and through Labor Day? Or are we going to start to see more inventory builds? And is the demand side going to come off somewhat? Not precipitously by any stretch of the imagination, but all else being equal and with what we see in front of us now, you can argue for prices to settle back to the low to mid 60s, I think would be the worst case scenario, but that's still a relatively healthy environment. But we, you know, if that's where we have to settle, as demand tails off a little bit once we get into September, then yeah, you know, prices can't stay near 70.
Well, one thing to consider, even with where crude is trading today, it's still up about 12% year to date. So still a relatively strong market. And crude is one of those markets, too, where the economy doesn't necessarily want crude to be screaming higher. A bit of a grind or a more steady move is, I think, better for traders and the economy to adjust to. Do you have a comment on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the age-old question, and it's one that we've started to ask a few times here recently because there have been some companies and some industries that have taken a hit. But, you know, when we were down, Corey, well below $30 a barrel, it was like 2008 all over again, and we were all worried about whether there was going to be a new deflationary implosion started by bankruptcies and the effect on banks and other financiers as the energy patch was in serious trouble. It never got as extremely bad as some of us thought might happen. So when the rebound came, everybody was able to breathe a sigh of relief that, oh, good, at least, you know, thank God energy is not going to do to the broader markets and economy what real estate did back a decade ago. So that was good. So that after that, sigh of relief and a very bullish and healthy take on the rebound in energy prices, the question now turns to how high will oil and, of course, the resulting products of gasoline and jet fuel and transportation costs for the UPSs and FedExes and everybody else of the world, the trucking companies, how high is it going to go before it becomes more of a tax on economic activity and a hit to companies' bottom lines? We're already seeing that with the airlines to some extent, with the transportation companies more so. And that, you know, I think that on balance, the net result is still more positive than not. But, you know, again, if we were to stay in the 60s to maybe the low 70s, I think everybody's used to that. Everybody has adjusted to that. We didn't, after all, go back to, in most places, at least $4 a gallon for gasoline this year, barely over $3 in the highest markets. So that's okay. That's something everybody can digest. And as the Fed pointed out today, you still, even with this rebound in energy costs, you have still healthy business spending and healthy consumer spending. If you had some one-off event in the Middle East, or a supply disruption someplace else, and oil started to break its highs and get into the 80s, now you got a problem, and that's where it would start to be seen as a negative by the markets, I think.
So, Chris, we have already talked about the Fed meeting, but we did have a Bank of Japan meeting that was yesterday, and we have a Bank of England meeting tomorrow. Were there any nuances that came out of the Bank of Japan or anything that you're looking forward to in terms of the Bank of England that you could think should be noteworthy moving forward for the markets?
Well, the Bank of Japan didn't do anything too dramatic. They indicated that they'll allow a little bit higher interest rate on the long end of the markets. We've talked about that already. That's part of the reason why our own Treasury yields have popped up. At one point today, the 10-year note was a sliver back above 3%. Now it's back below it as you and I are talking. As far as the Bank of England, that's an interesting thing because it wasn't that long ago that it was believed that the Bank of England would finally raise interest rates again. But now there's some question because of all of these worries over Brexit and whether it's going to come off or not or how and all the rest of this stuff. So they're a little bit queasy right now. And I think, Corey, that's a bigger part of the story is it's kind of like the Fed versus everyone else, because at the same time that we heard from the Fed today that it's very bullish on the economy, it's going to maintain its methodical tightening posture that it has right now. The other central banks really aren't following along. The Bank of Japan is not going to really stop its quantitative easing that much. It's just going to tweak it by letting long rates go a little bit higher, but it still owns the majority of everything in that whole country. Europe, where economic statistics have been very shaky in the recent past, it remains to be seen whether they're reducing of their quantitative easing is going to continue as has previously been telegraphed. But what they also came out and said recently is that they don't see any change in the interest rate structure itself all the way through next year now. So this is going to continue to keep that differential between our policy on the Fed's part and everybody else's, if not widen it a bit. And one of several questions that we didn't get the answer to in today's brief Fed meeting is when we see the minutes come out later on, how much, if anything, are they addressing this relatively stronger dollar, what it's doing elsewhere, and the extent to which they give any thought whatsoever, whether they want to or not, to having to maybe modify their plans if nobody else is in a position where they can catch up, and in fact, if any of them start going the other direction, which I know it's usually not mentioned with the Bank of England and Bank of Japan and European Central Bank, but the Chinese Central Bank is sure as hell going back in the other direction now.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I guess the major takeaway here, Chris, when we see a Fed statement that I think we all can label as extremely boring and not telling us anything new, and as you pointed out, with some more tariff news, we don't even know what that's going to be coming up shortly, later today at 3:30. Are the markets just back to being kind of boring, shrugging off a lot of news, and maybe just having money rotate within them?
I don't know if I'd say it's boring. Of course, it's summertime, and so volumes have been light pretty much the whole time. So far at least, the path of least resistance has been stronger for stocks generally, even if the cyclicals and the metals and all the rest of them have been weak. And really, even energy stocks, you've had several big exploration and production companies come out with disappointing earnings. Most energy companies have come out with earnings that should have been better given where things are at. So that's a problem. But I just think that you've kind of got this muscle memory on the part of the traders who aren't on vacation that every time, one of the FANG stocks drops, you got to buy it back. Apple today is, of course, keeping the Nasdaq higher because it's over $200 for the first time on a decent earnings report. And, it doesn't matter what the valuation is of it, it's become an asset class unto itself. So, I don't really have any take, Corey, on the overall market right now. I think everybody is kind of treading water. I think that if we see this move in interest rates that has resumed recently continue, and we see the long end move well above 3%, that's going to start to get people's attention a little bit more, especially if we threaten the closing high again for this year, which was 311 back, I think it was in May.
Yeah, that is a market that I find interesting, especially earlier today when the 10-year was above 3%, has drifted back down, but it has been in a general uptrend over the last few days. Let's see if we get a higher move, but again, that 3% has really been a sticking point for the 10-year. Chris, thanks for recapping a bit of what we're seeing in the markets and that overall boring statement from the Fed. Have a great rest of your day.